Welcome to Okay, Let's Talk. I'm your host, Kendall Ford. I am a writer, storyteller, and absolutely love empowering people. I believe that our stories and experiences, no matter how much pain or heartbreak they may have once caused, hold incredible power. The power to bring freedom, the power to uplift others, and the power to live triumphantly. Sometimes people just need a listening ear and a safe space. This is that space. So, okay, let's talk. Hey, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Super excited to have you here. Thank you for listening. I hope you're having an amazing week so far, or well, I guess the week is almost over today, but I hope it's been amazing. I know the weather here in Missouri has been real crazy and cold right now, and I've been literally freezing and wet all week from the rain, but I'm glad that the weekend's almost here. I'm glad that it is Halloween weekend, so I hope you have fun taking your kids trick-or-treating if that's what you do. I take my kid trick-or-treating because I want the candy. It is solely for selfish reasons. But yeah, let's dive into today's episode. So, you know, we're going to start, of course, with my Kendall's 5-minute soapbox. So I'm going to start my timer. I'm super excited for my soapbox topic today. So I'm going to head and start the timer. And so, yeah, today's 5-minute soapbox topic is I want to talk to you guys about side hustles. I believe I was at a conference and someone mentioned that this generation is the generation of the side hustle. And I love that statement because it's so true. But I feel like a lot of times this calling us the generation of the side hustle has been used as like this empowerment thing. Like, you know, go out there and make your dreams happen, which is true, which is awesome. However, I want to highlight the reason that so many of us actually do have side hustles. And so, you know, if you have a side hustle and maybe you're a side hustle OG and you've always been like doing multiple things, awesome. And I hope that and I pray that your side hustle is something that you're good at, that brings you joy, that you're like, you know what, I love providing this service or these things, these jewelry, these items or whatever to people. And so I spend my free time making them and then I sell them. I hope that it's something that is life-giving and bringing you joy and building you an empire. But I just want to take the moment to acknowledge the other reason that a lot of us have a side hustle. So y'all know I have my own business. I do social media content on the side as well as my full-time job. I ghostwrite. I'm a writer, storyteller. So I do all that kind of things. I do social media consulting. I help people build social media plans for their businesses and for their nonprofits. And the reason I do that is because of that. I love it. But if I'm really being honest, I felt like I had no choice. And so I created a side hustle in my own business because honestly, I got sick and tired of begging and fighting for seats at other people's tables that really didn't want me there, that would let me in because they felt bad and then demeaned me. And you know what? I was just freaking tired of it. So I have my side hustle because one, I need the extra money. I'm a single mom and I have a single income household and we need the extra funds coming in to do the things that we need to do. But also because I got sick and tired of begging to be a seat at someone else's table that didn't really want me there. So I just created my own freaking table, period. And so while I do feel empowered and I love that I have this business and this whole other side of me that I hope will one day become my main gig, If I didn't have to fight so hard as a woman of color to have value in this world, to have my gifts and talents taken seriously in the work world, if I could find those positions that would really pay me what I'm worth, I probably wouldn't have this side hustle, period. But on the flip side, I have recently gotten to rub elbows with and interact with some amazing people, especially people of color who are doing some amazing and wonderful things in the world. And so not to be a Debbie Downer on the whole situation, but if you're doing your side hustle thing and you're making your dreams happen, huge, huge shout out to you, especially if you're one of the people that I've gotten to kind of interact with lately. You are inspiring to me. Your strength is beautiful. Your stories are amazing. That's why I created my business to help you tell them. And so I just want to take a moment to encourage you that if you are like me and you had to create your own table because you didn't want to fight for a place of someone else's, or maybe it wasn't about the fight. Maybe you're just doing this out of passion. Keep doing you. I applaud you, because we are the generation of the side hustle. And on the flip side of that, a lot of us are in crippling debt from school, from whatever, from life. And we bought into an education system that was sold to us by the generations before us. And then it is now breaking us and crippling us in debt. And the economy is a whole nother issue. But yeah, if you're doing your thing and trying to make your dreams happen so that you can not only just make a living, but also like pay off your debt and make your dreams happen and create an empire for your families, kudos to you. Amazing job. Keep doing a great job. I support you. I see you. I value you. And I am inspired by you. But also, let's not forget that some of us are sick and tired of fighting for seats at tables that don't want us there. And so we are creating our own table. So if that's what you've done, I applaud you. And that's why I have my own business. And so I wanted to make sure that I brought this other perspective to the argument or to the conversation about side hustles, because while it is amazing and it's great and it's creative, it's out of a necessity to live and to live a life of value and of worth, and taking my own gifts and talents seriously, and that I have and many of us have created our side hustles from that spirit. And so applaud people for doing their side hustle. Support people as they do their side hustle. My timer is going off. I'm almost done. Yeah, applaud people for doing their side hustle. Support people doing their side hustle. But also know that may not only be a dream, it may also be a place of them empowering themselves and a place of desperation of them deciding not to settle for less. And I'm done. So I'm super excited about today's episode, because all along as I dreamt about and planned the show, it wasn't just about giving myself a platform. It was also about giving others the platform to bring education or bring awareness or talk about maybe their elephant in the room, per se, or even just to talk about something that's on their heart that they wish other people were talking about. And so I've had a chance to start sitting down with certain friends of mine and people I've been meeting in the community, and I'm super excited for our guest today. I sat down with a friend of mine. Her name is Abby Block, and she is an interior designer. She has her own design company here in Springfield called Heirloom Interior Design Company. And we talked about her experience being a female business owner in Springfield. And so it was a really good conversation. And I'm super excited to hear what you all think. And I hope that you are inspired, but also maybe educated a little more about what it's like being a female business owner in Springfield. And maybe you're thinking of becoming a female business owner wherever you are, or a business owner in general, because this show loves men and women. I hope that you're also inspired to go out there and chase your dreams. So with no further ado, I bring you Abby Block.
Hey, Abby, welcome to OK, Let's Talk.
Hey, how are you?
Are you excited?
I am. I am very excited. I have been talking about this all weekend with Ian, so I'm super excited. Also, my first time on a podcast.
Is your first time on a podcast?
Mm-hmm.
Woo, woo. Woo, woo. So, you know, I bring my friends on or people I meet in the community or whatever, and I let them have a platform and get on their own soapbox, per se, and then I basically join you because, you know, I can rant about anything. Mm-hmm. So what is it that you want to educate our listeners about today? What are we going to talk about?
So I think we're going to talk about owning a business as a female, and specifically being a female business owner in Springfield.
And both of us are that.
Right.
Okay, yes. So tell us a little bit of your business story. Like, how did you become a business owner?
Yeah, so I am the owner of Heirloom Design Company, which is an interior design studio here in Springfield, but I opened my studio in June of this year, so it's a pretty new business. Mm-hmm. And I kind of came into the area of being an interior designer because my family is all in the home industry. And then it's something that I've been wanting to do for a long time. I did other stuff after college, but kind of came back to this. Right. And the stars just aligned personally, you know,
yeah,
to where I was able to open up a business.
Yeah.
And so that's how I kind of got to where I was able to start Heirloom. But, you know, I don't have a business background or business degree. So it's just been months of learning how to run a business and learning about like what being a female business owner is like. Because you hear people talk about it a lot, but actually experiencing it is definitely different.
Exactly. And so I know you're from St. Louis. Did you start your business in St. Louis, or were you already in Springfield when you started your business?
So I did interior design on the side in St. Louis.
Oh, it was your side hustle.
Yeah, my side hustle.
Okay.
A side hustle where I just did it for family and friends and never took any money from it, though. And so I was like, I think it's time to start. You know, I feel like I have good enough experience and there seems to be a demand.
Right.
You know, where my business could fit into the marketplace. So, and part of the reason I felt empowered to start my business was moving to Springfield,
mm-hmm.
because it was basically a really good time for me to exit my last job,
right.
and financially set up a business. And I'm lucky enough to have Ian, who's my soon-to-be husband, as a support system in case anything were to happen. You know, like, I do support and run my own business, but it's nice to have that backdrop, just
right.
knowing. So,
right. Okay. So what was it like when you, I'm sure you got, you know, you've listened to the podcast. I have a lot of opinions about Springfield.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have encountered some of those same opinions. What was your first impression of Springfield when you got out there as a new female business owner?
I've told Ian this a lot. It's weird. I've really come across some unusual things, not necessarily just things that I feel like I experience as a female business owner, but just in general being a business owner in Springfield, like some really weird people, people who you don't really understand how or why they have a business or how they run that business or what exactly they do, or things like that. And especially in the entrepreneurial space,
right.
come across some very interesting people.
Right.
So...
I have two, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was at a huddle recently, a networking huddle, and there was a guy there who was talking about what he does, and he said, like, how did he described himself as like a, oh, dang, I'm forgetting the word. He, like a creator. Like, he's like, I create things. I was like, and my mind was like, he didn't have a specific, like, what he does.
Yeah.
And everyone in the group was like, looking, giving this look, and I was, in my mind, I'm like, dude, do you sell drugs? Like, it was just like, what do you do?
Yeah.
And it was really funny because you could see everyone in a group there. All their eyes were just like, so what do you do, though? Like, how do you make money?
Yeah.
And so someone else had to pipe in and say, guys, he's an inventor, which I was like, okay.
Yeah.
About the builder.
Cool. I mean, that's cool. That is cool.
But it was just so weird.
Yeah. And I think it gets difficult, too, because especially as an entrepreneur, you don't have that really solid set of background experience usually.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to running your business and trying to explain it to people, that's not always easy because you didn't get to go through it in college
right.
necessarily. But I know, I'm not saying that, you know, you need to have that, but it can be difficult. But I remember like at 1 Million Cups, I went to this one week and someone presented. And at the end of the 10-minute presentation, I was like, I have absolutely no idea what this business is at all. I'm not even sure if this person really knows.
Oh, no.
Or, like, I don't know what point this is or whatever. But, well, I mean, specifically with being in Springfield, a part of me really feels like it's been awesome.
Yeah.
As an entrepreneur because...
It is a great place for entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when you consider the size of the town.
Exactly.
Which, how many people live here? What, like 200,000?
I think it's a little under that, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know.
So either way, it's not like a big metro area right. where you'd expect a lot of resources. But, like, SCORE of Southwest Missouri mm-hmm. is amazing. They mm-hmm. put out, I've used so many of their free resources to
yeah.
try to build my business or even just learn new skills along the way. And that's where we met.
Yep.
Right? So
yeah, at the Women's Conference.
Yes.
That was awesome.
At the Women's Conference. Yeah. So doing stuff like that and then... kind of along with having a lot of good resources, also having a good community, I feel like, for the most part, the entrepreneurial community here is very non-competitive.
Yeah.
And that's been really good for me, too, because, you know, when you get into a competitive space, you kind of get into a bad mental spot too.
Especially in your field. I'm sure you can see a lot of crazy competition. Yeah. And like, how many shows are on Netflix right now about interior design?
Oh, a lot.
All right. Yeah. And so just in that, like, oh my gosh, I would be so nervous.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I think that, so one thing I just have to continually remind myself of is, one, how is my studio different from right. other people's,
and then exactly.
what specific skills can I bring? Because, you know, when I think about how many different shows there might be about mm-hmm. interior design, I still have my favorite too mm-hmm. for what it is that they bring, even though there's so many others. Mm-hmm. So that's what I try to keep in mind too. But then I also think you probably know this as a business owner, that when it comes to networking or being in the know with your competitors, that's not always a great way to go. Like, I haven't found that. I don't like to talk with other interior designers in Springfield.
Really?
Yeah, because then the competitiveness comes out.
Really? Have you said, so you've had encounters with other interior designers where you tell me a story. I want to know. You don't have to mention names, but I want to know, like, share a little bit of the insight. What does the interior design world look like?
It's pretty siloed, okay. honestly. Yeah, I mean, we don't really interlap at a, is that a word? I don't know.
You can make it a word.
Yeah. So at a lot of functions, like, yeah. you know, in some other places maybe, because I mean, there are a lot within Springfield, but then also there's a few in the surrounding areas.
Right. Right.
The only place I think you would find multiple interior designers in one spot is there's like a, it's a real fake business group called like Professional Interior Designers or something like that.
Okay.
And if I'm being honest, when I looked at it, I was like, that's just a circle jerk of interior designers and I don't need to join that. Mm-hmm. So there's that, but then like a specific encounter that I had. So I'm in the Junior League of Springfield, which is a good organization. It's good because it connects me with a lot of volunteer opportunities.
Right.
Which is what I was looking for. But when you enter the Junior League, you kind of have to go through like a 1-year training session.
Okay.
And so you're in a group with other women. It's a women-only organization.
Okay.
And then I found out that there's another interior designer in the group, which is all fine, but she's an interior designer whose values I don't agree with as okay. a business owner.
Yeah.
So, like, I hyped myself up. I was like, oh God, she's in this group. And like, I don't even want to meet her. You know, this is going to be terrible. And she's probably just going to be like, who do you think you are to be an interior designer? And, you know, like, how do you make money in your business and all this kind of stuff? You know, we went to a meeting and I didn't talk to her because I was too nervous to talk to her.
Oh.
And I just like stared at her from across the room like a weirdo. Then we were at a Junior League event together, and I was like, you know what? To heck with it. I'm just going to go up, and I'm going to talk to her and introduce myself. And she was so nice. She was so nice. But also, I definitely try to avoid any kind of competitiveness. Yeah. So when I went up to her, I was just like, hey, I really admire your work. I follow you on Instagram, and I think it's awesome to see another person who started their own interior design business without a degree, because she doesn't have one either. And mm-hmm. I don't know, she really, like, I guess took that compliment well, because she was like, oh my gosh, like, thank you so much for coming up. And then we talked for like 5 minutes.
That's cool.
Yeah, and it was cool. Yeah. And on Instagram, it always weirds me out too, because I'll see some of the other interior designers in Springfield will like look at my stories or like my posts and stuff, and I'm like, what do you think? I don't want to know, but what do you think?
Right. I've felt that a little bit, because there's a lot of marketing firms in Springfield, like big, small, whatever. But I'm kind of like you, where I constantly remind myself that I present something to the market that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And so while a lot of them focus on like the numbers behind it, and they have the staff or the whatever, I focus more on the stories behind it.
Yeah.
And so, and I think there's a place for both.
Right.
And so I totally get that though. Like, I always have to remind myself, like, I don't market that way.
Yeah.
I help people humanize their businesses, and they can help with the numbers, the statistics or whatever else. But I totally get that. And then meeting them out at other networking events, it's like, whew.
Yeah, and I think that it takes a very self-conscious, not in like the bad way, but just a mindful person to recognize my business might be different than yours, but that doesn't mean it doesn't bring value to a customer in a way that's different than yours.
Exactly.
And I don't know about you, but I meet a lot of business owners who I don't feel that way about them. Like, I don't think that they have that kind of mindfulness.
Oh, for sure.
And it might be, you know, them trying to assert themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. In the business-to-business community, it's not necessary because mm-hmm. they're not your clients. You're not their clients, so why do you have to try to one-up each other?
Exactly. It's nothing worse than being at a networking event and feeling like someone there is trying to sell you their business almost.
Oh,
like,
all the time.
Yo, we're both here as business owners. We're trying to network and collaborate together or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, we were just talking about this, but like, insurance agents
are
like, I'm sorry, I have some friends who are insurance agents. Love you guys dearly, but y'all are some of the worst at networking events. We all run.
Yeah.
We're just like, no, I'm not buying life insurance today.
So aggressive. Yeah. I mean, they go after it. I get that because they're there to make money, but whew, that entire industry.
Yeah. It's a big industry here, too.
It is. It's crazy. So big. But so what you're talking about with being at business-to-business networking events or something like that, that's a space where I really feel a difference in being a female business owner.
Yeah.
Because we've talked before about how we try to run our businesses in a relationship kind of way. I like to build relationships with my clients or prospective clients or even my business networking professionals. Right. And some people just don't run their business that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine, you know, if it got them to where they are. But it gets really dicey in the business-to-business space because if you're running your business and you just... One of my mottos is sell a smile before I sell a product.
That's nice.
Yeah, because, I mean, interior design specifically is such a personal service mm-hmm. that you can't do well unless you really understand the person and their needs. And you listen.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, don't even get me started. That's the next bit. Talking about listening.
I want to hear the next bit.
Yeah. So when I meet someone at a business to business networking event, I'm never going to pitch them.
Right.
Why would I? Like, that's not how I want to run my business and why I don't do business to business sales. Right. But especially being a female, I feel like when it comes to those business B2B events, I don't have a voice and I get very nervous to speak up for myself because I'll let a dude pitch me for like an hour and I don't know how to walk away because personally, I just don't want to be rude.
Right.
Two, I'm like, okay, maybe I'll have the chance to tell him about my business, but I don't.
Right.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not making a blanket statement. Not all guys are like this. But
no, but we've all seen those guys.
I mean, at least one at every event. It happens at every single event. And so, I mean, also, if you don't run your business based on relationships, then you don't really care if you pitch me for an hour and I don't care at all,
mm-hmm.
you know? So that's where it gets really dicey. But with being a woman, I've always felt like it's rude to interrupt someone. That's just what I was taught. Men aren't necessarily socially brought up the same way.
Right.
So I don't want to interrupt someone. And then I also... This could just be me, but feel like it's easier for me to let a guy belittle me and my business than it is like a female to do that. I don't know if it's just because females don't do that as much or feel like they can't get up on that soapbox and talk down to people. But I mean, I've had that happen with a business coach who like he was pitching me, but he was also like shitting on my business at the same time.
What?
Well, that's what his business is founded on, is finding problems in your business and then twisting it, essentially, so that he's the only one who can fix them.
And I just think, like, this whole idea of men in men sometimes can lack, and not to talk down about the men who are listeners, like, we love you guys, but there's a lot of self-awareness that I think they lack sometimes.
Yeah.
I was at a networking event, and there was a presenter, and I wasn't sure what exactly he was supposed to be talking about, but he must have spent 20 minutes telling his whole life story. I was like, yo, what the hell?
Yeah.
I was like, what exactly are you supposed to be talking about?
Not like, relevant.
And it just, to me, was like, you got to be able to read the room and reach audience.
Yeah.
And sometimes men don't always walk into the networking situations with the best mindset. But you know, in one way, in one way, it kind of inspires me though, mm-hmm. because I try to walk into rooms like them, like I belong there.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, I'm confident in my gifts and talents. I'm mm-hmm. confident in my business. Mm-hmm. I'm confident in myself because that's how they walk in.
Yeah.
And no one has to give them that permission. It kind of helps me to embody that a little bit. Like, if they can show up like that, then so can we. Yeah. Unapologetically, like, I'm here and I'm in the room and I'm confident in what I offer.
Yeah.
And so I've just kind of taken a page off of their book and I'm like, I'm just going to walk into this networking event like I'm a overqualified middle-aged white man.
And you're going to tell someone that they look great in that skirt today.
Exactly. Exactly. Except the difference is I'm going to lift people up while I'm doing it and not, like, talk down about someone's business. Not that they all do that, but...
No, yeah.
But it has happened.
Yeah.
It has happened. So tell me one thing that, like, really, just really frustrates you about being a female business owner.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm a little bit different in the sense that interior design is actually a pretty female-dominated space. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not like I'm trailblazing right. or anything like that in right. this space, because I'm not. But specifically with being a female business owner, I really think it's just the mental games that I have to play with myself. Mm. Just, I don't know, because being a business owner, you have to speak up. You have to be very present all the time, which... As a woman, you know, I feel like I was very much so socialized to sit pretty and right. be prim and proper right. and not talk over people right. and be a good listener and things like that. But then also just constantly, like, convincing myself that I bring value to what I do and right. to other people, and that my skills are actually worth what I say they're worth.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
I mean, there's all of the other stuff, like... men catcalling in a business space, which happens, but that's also the kind of shit that, like, you expect, because we just deal with that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say that for me, it's definitely the mental games all of the time. And then when you add someone on top of that who is belittling you in some way, it just kind of, it almost, like, sends me into a little spiral.
Right.
Like, oh, spend the whole next week trying to convince myself that right. I'm good enough for this.
Right.
And I know I'm not alone in that, because we talked a lot mm-hmm. at the E3 Women's Conference. Almost every woman I talked with there had some kind of feeling
on yeah. that. Some kind of self-talk they have to do to get themselves into the room. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm not trying to say, you know, like, that's my dad's fault, or that's my right. parents' fault, or my teacher's fault, or anything like that. But I had a really lengthy conversation with one of my best friends in St. Louis about this last weekend, because naturally I went back and we were talking about how my business has done since I moved away. And that was the main thing that came up. And she's a psychologist, and she just went all into this detail about, like, how, like, there's research that shows that women are brought up differently. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's super cool now that we have a lot of programs in place that can kind of teach those skills.
Right.
That maybe might not be taught in the home or right. something like that. But when I was growing up, like, it just wasn't like that.
Right.
And I also come from Mid Missouri, so it wasn't a progressive place. Mm-hmm. So
right,
yeah.
And as you're talking, I'm sitting here like, I think that having to talk yourself up, kind of like that you are valuable, that you are gifted and talented, that because mm-hmm. You were talking about, like, how your place. I think you said your voice is, like, you have to make sure your voice is heard and things like that. Yeah. Coming from the Black community and from the urban Black community, as you're talking, I'm like, I was kind of raised the exact opposite.
Really?
Yeah, where I was raised by a very strong, independent, working Black woman who yeah. was like, when you walk into a room, you belong in that place. So you hold your head high.
Yeah.
You say what you need to say, and you don't let people walk all over you. And that was just how I was raised. But now that I'm in the business world, so being raised that way made me I have a more dominant personality. Mm-hmm. And I find that going into the business world, sometimes I have to just read the room and watch my audience.
Yeah.
Because you can come sure. in too strong.
Yeah.
Because I think we've both probably seen women that we were like, okay, sis, like, come in, be confident, but damn. Yeah. Because you don't
Like you have our attention. It's okay.
Right, yeah. Right. Like, I know that I can be confident without bulldozing people because that's not my desire.
Yes, yes.
My desire is to really empower people. Mm-hmm. And so in my business and how I present myself as an entrepreneur, it's that I'm confident and you're not going to disrespect me. However, yeah. I want to present myself and my business in a way where it can be received.
Yeah.
But that's a tricky balance between doing that and taking away pieces of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I've found that a little hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, even at the E3 conference, we talked a lot. We were talking about specifically diversity in the workforce, but like the last keynote speaker was bringing up, see something, say something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that that can also go for if we're just talking about gender in the workplace. So, like, for example, this didn't happen to me, but, and it was more of like a microaggression, but nonetheless still upsetting. I was at a 1 Million Cups event, and this woman had just presented her business, and she was talking about how she found a really good support network with Rosie, which, mm-hmm. for your listeners who don't know, is it's a business group here in Springfield that is all for female business owners,
yeah.
And it's exclusively women,
mm-hmm.
and there's a point in that. But there's a kind of like an ally support group of Rosie called Brosie. And
oh, I didn't know that there is an ally support called Brosie. I'm in Rosie, but I didn't know about Brosie.
Okay. Yeah. So, Brosie is basically just a group for men who want to support the efforts of Rosie in some kind of way.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I said, to be an ally, but not, you know, like they can't actually be in Rosie cause they are not women.
Yeah.
So anyway, she was talking about, she literally just explained that to this guy. And when she was talking about Brosie, he goes, oh, so it's totally just all of the husbands of the women who are in Brosie. And I was like, Jesus.
Oh my gosh.
Like it was just really upsetting for me to hear because on one hand, he was basically trying to say like, in a way, women who are in Rosie only deserve or receive support from their husbands mm-hmm. as business owners. But then also, this woman was so clearly excited to be talking about Rosie as a group that really supported her,
mm-hmm.
and he's just trying to kind of undervalue it.
Exactly.
For what reason?
Exactly. And it's his comment insinuates that a man with no ties to Rosie because of a wife, sister, family member, or whatever would have any care for the women in his community.
Yeah.
And I've found that is not true.
That is not true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, let's stop talking about that in that way, you know?
Yeah.
And granted, this was an older gentleman who mm-hmm. he maybe just wasn't brought up that way or had no idea what Rosie actually does.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the kind of community that you kind of see at odds here in Springfield a little bit. Because my listeners come from all over the states, and I've talked about it before, how Springfield is just, it's interesting.
Because mm-hmm.
you have this community of, I would say, 45 and younger,
mm-hmm.
who maybe we're not all from here, but they're doing some amazing things in the community, and it's becoming more progressive and more aware of mm-hmm. what's happening around the world. Then you have this 50 and over community that thinks that it might still be 1970, and it's okay to say and do certain things, and we're just like, no. Oh, goodness, no.
Oh, yeah, you can't say that.
And so even balancing that as a business owner is really tough.
Yeah.
I had a really interesting conversation, again, at 1 Million Cups.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time at 1 Million Cups. For our listeners who don't know what 1 Million Cups is, I think it's nationwide, mm-hmm. right? It's a nationwide networking for entrepreneurs. It happens Wednesday mornings at 8:30.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah. And it is a really great group.
No, it is an amazing group. Yeah. I love 1 Million Cups. I just have a lot of conversations. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of conversations there recently. But I had a woman that I was had met at a previous event, and she was trying to remember what I was connected to. And I don't usually talk about my regular day job on here, but I work with single moms.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, oh, yeah, you wanted to, like, start a coffee shop. I was like, no, that wasn't me. I was like, I would love to start a women's shelter. And she said something about, like, oh, well, Springfield has enough of those. And I was like, no, it doesn't.
What?
No, it doesn't. Yeah. So I had to school her a little bit about how there's nowhere for a lot of women to go who are homeless and sleeping on the streets.
Right.
Right now. And I've had to personally in my full-time job turn away a few women and say, like, I'm so sorry I can't find you somewhere to stay tonight. And right. to go home to my warm apartment and know that they're sleeping on the street was heartbreaking for me. Mm-hmm. And so it's just those kind of unawareness things that we run into sometimes.
Yes.
Not even just being people who live here in Springfield, but trying to run a business here. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of educating that has to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And, I mean, for you as a Black woman, that's especially important because,
yeah,
you know, as a white woman, I want to exemplify your voice. I'm not going to take your place and say right. that, but I will from like a female business owner's perspective or anything like that. And I run into that all the time, but especially with my business, having an emphasis on sustainability.
Exactly.
There's a lot of education
oh my gosh.
That goes into that.
I'm sure.
Which I'm happy to do for my clients.
Yeah.
but
I'm sure you have to do it all the time.
I do. I do have to do it all the time. And but I will say about half of the time, you know, people just kind of hear sustainability and they go, oh yeah, cool. That's awesome. You know, like nobody really knows
yeah.
or whatever. And if they do, they're just like, cool, cool feature.
Do you sometimes have a hard time selling or marketing the sustainability that you focus on with your company because we live in a Republican state? That may or may not believe that
yeah.
global warming is...
Sure. So I think that there's definitely some, I guess you would say, implicit bias there. People instantly hear sustainability and they might be like, no, not yeah. for me. I haven't had anybody say that directly to my face.
Okay.
But, you know, that probably is something that kind of just goes on there. But actually, I would say it's almost the flip side that is harder for me, which is... trying to promote my business as a business that actually cares about sustainability and isn't just using it for a marketing tool.
Right.
That's harder.
Right.
Because there's a lot of that that
because
goes
on. Because it sounds good.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. I've had people say...
It's really in right now.
Yeah, I've had people say, oh, that's the sexy thing right now. And I'm like, yeah, but that's unfortunate that you think I just want to do this because it'll make me more money.
Right.
You know? So that's actually been harder than marketing to conservatives.
So one thing I want to talk about too, while we have you here, that I love about your business is that it is a social enterprise, mm-hmm. which is something that a lot of people don't know about. Actually, Abby presented at Woman in Cups last week, and she goes, does anyone here know what a social enterprise is? I was like the only one that raised my hand.
Yeah.
But that's because, I don't know if I ever told you, but I did like a small stint in grad school. I didn't finish my graduate degree, but okay. I did like 2 years of a program. I was getting a graduate's degree in nonprofit management and social entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't finish it. I dropped out.
Yeah.
It was rough.
Yeah.
But... that's why I know so much about social enterprises mm-hmm. and I love them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so tell me a little bit about the social enterprise side of your business.
Yes. Okay. We're ready for a book here now. I'm going to kick it back to the inception because, if you had asked me 5 years ago, if I ever thought I would be a business owner, I would say hell no, because, to be frank, capitalism is really a huge instigator of climate change. Mm. And so I never thought that I would have a place to incorporate a business into my lifestyle as someone who does care a lot about combating climate change and educating right. the public on that. But then, you know, the more the time has progressed and things have become a lot more intense, and we're really, really starting to see the effects of climate change and our time is running out.
Right.
I was reading something really interesting, and you can find a lot of literature on it now that's talking about how climate change has become such a big and global issue, and the scale of it is so large at this point that to really be able to make any kind of impactful difference, companies and enterprise and big government have to be at the helm of it. Because we've been trying grassroots for the last like 50 years
and it's not working.
Okay. Yeah. And so who has the money and the scale and the ability and the employees to really make a difference?
Right.
It is corporations and mm-hmm. big business and big government. And when I say big government, I mean like we're talking national scale.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Well, international, really. So with that in mind, I was like, okay. And at the time, I had kind of learned about social entrepreneurship and what it meant to be a social mm-hmm. entrepreneur. And how you don't have to run a business that just delivers a service or a product to be all end all. You can do more than that. And there's a lot of companies who are good examples of that.
Yeah.
You know, like some companies that I look up to are like Patagonia or some other ones that have kind of dwindled over the years. But if you look at really like any B Corp,
yeah,
certified corp, those yeah. are businesses that really do try hard to make a difference. And so with my business, what I do is sustainability is one of the pillars of my business in general. So whether that looks like educating my clients on sustainable alternatives for their homes in lots of different ways, that could be full on remodeling, energy efficiency, or even things like instead of buying a new couch, why don't you go buy a vintage couch? Because do you know how much goes into the production and waste of right. producing a new couch?
Right.
But then also for my clients who don't care about sustainability, how was I going to make a difference if they didn't want to do anything with that? And my solution was to donate 5% of my profits to an organization called All We Can Save.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's a lot of groups out there who fight climate change in a lot of different ways. But what I like about All We Can Save is it's very much so combating climate change through a diversity and inclusion lens.
Okay.
Because often it is the minority communities that are affected first mm-hmm. and hardest. Like Hurricane Katrina is a great example yep. of that. By climate change. So, and it's also very much so an organization that tries to call people in rather than calling people out for the conversation. Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I support them. And so as a social entrepreneur,
love that concept of calling people in instead of calling them out.
Yeah, I know. It's really nice. And, you know, climate change can be a pretty dicey issue.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because it's not a political issue. It's just an everyone issue that we have made political.
Yeah.
So,
and but anyway, people don't understand it all the way.
Yeah.
You know?
No.
So a lot of people get afraid of things they don't understand.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
Right. But, so at the end of the day, I came to this realization of like, okay, I am a part of society. I do have to earn my own living in society. So what am I going to do? Am I going to work for a company or an organization that I agree with the mission? I did that for a while mm-hmm. and it was fine, but I just felt like I had a little bit more to offer.
Yeah.
And so starting my own business was kind of the answer to that. But then I just want always to make sure that whatever I'm doing, it isn't just delivering interior design services.
Right.
It's
right.
also contributing to something that I see as extremely important.
Right. That's awesome.
Thanks.
And it's kind of like that kind of what all of that behind your business is one of the reasons why I created my small business mm-hmm. too, is because so many people are doing amazing things for great reasons.
Mm.
And I love the idea of social enterprises because they it's kind of a little bit the best of both worlds where
yep.
they can take care of and care for a community while also selling a product or making money. Because I think sometimes with nonprofits, I was just having this conversation over coffee this morning. Really, the reason that nonprofits exist is because, and not the reason they exist, but one of the reasons they're allowed to exist the way they exist today
mm-hmm.
is because the government looks at them as alleviating some of the burden off of them.
Yeah.
So that's why they get a tax break.
Yeah.
Because the government is saying like, hey, you're providing a service, you're providing a homeless shelter or whatever that otherwise would be the government's responsibility to kind of help the people out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not really their responsibility, but tell some people to look at it.
Yeah.
And nonprofits come in and step in and take off some of that local care from
yeah.
federal and state governments. And so they're allowed tax breaks. They're allowed certain things. But it doesn't mean that they have to be poor.
Yeah. No.
But I love social enterprises because it kind of creates the best of both worlds. And I think there's not a lot of awareness about them. I think sometimes people know businesses care about the community, but they don't understand it's actually it's a social enterprise, or you could be a social entrepreneur, create
mm-hmm.
businesses that care about and are plugged into the community
yeah.
and into a greater meaning.
Mm-hmm.
If someone's in a business to do more than just pad their pockets,
mm-hmm.
I want to help them market themselves.
Mm, yeah.
I want to help them share their story.
Right.
Especially if it's like woman led,
mm-hmm.
minority led, or just someone's doing something astronomically amazing. Like
yeah.
people need to hear way more than the facts and figures. They need to hear their story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. It's the facts and figures are fine, but it's the stories that customers really care about.
Exactly.
You know, and like you were saying earlier about this kind of being a concept that communities don't seem to know a whole lot about, it That is definitely true. But what I think is so interesting is that this is not a new...
It's not new.
Not new. Mm-mm. Like, there's companies that have been doing this for so long. For
so long.
But I think where... I don't know. The rubber meets the road is, can I do it as a solo entrepreneur?
Right.
You know? Can I grow my business to where it's big enough to where I really can make a difference?
Right.
That is the question. But, I mean, there's a lot of other ways to bring value rather than just what kind of profit you make or can donate.
Right.
So,
and I think one thing you have going for you is your heart behind it.
Mm.
You know, I think when I think of the business that we both own and how we go about marketing ourselves and networking ourselves around town, it's that relationability, which, again, won't speak to everybody, but it's huge.
Yeah.
From us, I don't feel this energy of, like, desperation when we go into network. I've met some people who just seem desperate.
Yeah.
And maybe they are. Maybe they got bills and they're like, everything's riding on this. I mean, I still have a full-time job, so... while I need this business to be profitable, everything isn't riding on it right now. But I also, you know, I'm doing something that I enjoy and I love.
Right.
And so in that, I don't feel this desperation because I feel like when we show up as our most authentic, joyful, happy selves, that we attract we attract the business because people know.
Yeah.
People know. People can tell that energy. Mm-hmm. At least the people you want, the clients we want will come.
Definitely.
And that's kind of been my experience is I market myself, I network my butt off, but I also have like gravitated towards people who are on the same wavelength as me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the benefits of being a business owner and an entrepreneur, but being committed to doing it relationally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think your business is going to be amazing. Not just because y'all can't see it, but I'm sitting in her house right now and it is so freaking cute. I'm like, you need to come reorganize my house for me. I feel like I've done pretty well.
Yeah.
But, and I just love, like, the vintagey, like, thrifty, like, all that stuff. That's, like, right up my alley.
Yeah.
And I love that. You know what I love about using things that are sustainable? Is that, and, like, repurposing?
Mm-hmm.
I love that something had a story before me.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, because I'm a storyteller. I'm, like, obsessed with people's stories.
Yeah.
And so when I just bought a new bar cart for my house a couple months ago. It was from a thrift store, or it was a consignment shop.
Sure.
But I love that it had a story before me.
Sure.
I love that I will pass, and it will go on after me. I think the decanters I have my wine in, like, my mom gave them to me.
Right.
Like, these are decanters she used when she was entertaining, when she was young and single. And now I'm young-ish and single and entertaining with the same decanters. And I love that kind of stuff. And so, like, those are kind of the things that you definitely have going for you.
Oh, thank
it's gonna
you.
It's going to be awesome.
Well, and I love it when I'm talking with people like you or, you know, clients I have or just anyone in the community really, and they are on, like you said, that same wavelength because with the storytelling, the trend in interior design right now in the real estate market in general is to not tell a story, to put a blank canvas out there so that, you know, a potential buyer will be able to put themselves into the house and see it.
Nah, I don't like that.
Right. And, you know, that's fine, I guess, if it moves houses and gets your house sold so you can move on to bigger and better things in life. But at the same time, like, your house is such a personal and intimate space.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but I can still think of many memories where I was at, like, a close relative's homes, and their houses were completely decked out in them. Like, you could just see them written all over it.
Yeah.
And I love that. That's a true nostalgic feeling that you can't replace with white walls and, you know, everything else white. So, and especially with incorporating vintage stuff, because if you buy vintage, you buy unique.
Yep.
So.
Yep. So, okay. So before we go, I have two more questions. Well, one is, so you're an interior designer.
Yep.
What is one interior design trend? Yeah, no, give me two. One interior design trend that you absolutely love right now.
Yes.
And one that you absolutely hate.
Yes. I love this question. So, the interior design trend that I absolutely love right now is called Grand Millennial Design.
Okay.
And let me preface this with, I think the best homes have a mix of interior design styles.
Okay.
Because it's very unlikely that you like just one thing. Right? Or that your taste and desires are solely based on one style.
Right.
So why would you want to do your house all in one way?
Right.
Because then it's going to look like a showroom. But, true. Okay, so with that in mind. But if I had to choose one, I would choose Grand Millennial Interior Design. And okay. Grand Millennial is an interior design trend that was started on TikTok, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah. So it's called Grand Millennial because basically it's...
I'm going to look at... Keep yeah. talking. I'm going to look it up on my phone so I can see whether or not I like it or not while you're talking yeah. about it.
So it's a pretty ornate, semi-maximalist interior design style. So very colorful, a lot of details, a lot of movement, and a little bit of... I mean, it's just kind of extra.
Okay. I think... Hold on, I'm having some... And is it Grand Millennial?
Grand Millennial, yeah. And some people describe it as like...
I love it.
You love it?
Okay, and I love that you use semi... Okay, I love that you use semi-maximalist because people in my life, I'm not going to name them because I love them dearly, but they make fun of me because I say I'm a maximalist.
That's a thing.
Thank you. Yeah, okay.
It's 100%.
So a big screw you to everyone in my life who says that I'm a hoarder. I'm not a hoarder. I'm yeah. a maximalist. And so I like minimalism actually gives me anxiety.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, why is there one piece of furniture in this room? Like, right. Ew.
Yeah.
I need to have you come over mm-hmm. and I'll cook you dinner okay. and then you can confirm this in person. But, like, I fill my house with plants and art, and I've designed the wall to do the, like, little, like, the thing that's really popular.
Oh, yeah, gallery wall?
Yeah, like a little, yeah.
No, I'm going to validate you
right here. Maximalism is a thing, and it's not hoarding. It's different, right?
No.
Thank you.
Do you have things stacked on the floor from floor to ceiling?
No.
Okay, well, that's a hoarder. No. Not maximalist.
No, you can move around.
Yeah, okay.
But, I like, my windowsill, so my new apartment has these huge windowsills, mm-hmm. and they, like, kind of like how you have, Abby has, like, a little, and it's almost like a little piece of wood, but it sticks out from her wall in her kitchen so that her and her husband, her fiance can sit there and have breakfast. But I have, my windowsills are nice and thick like that.
Thick like that, yeah.
Yeah, so they sit back, like, a foot and a half. Mm-hmm. So I filled them with, like, photos of my family, yeah. flowers, vintage little rack things to rack my flowers. I also have, like, art hanging up there, candles.
Yeah.
Like, all kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And... I love it. People in my life have called me a hoarder.
Well, not everyone likes to have their personal items on display as much. So
jerks.
That's yeah. what
I also like a lot of color.
Yeah.
So I have like
yes,
like none of my rugs are one color except for the one in my bedroom that's lime green.
Yeah.
Yeah. I literally have like a checkered multicolor rug next to a zebra print rug, and it gives me so much joy.
That's awesome. That's all you want for your home, truly.
It like, brings me so much joy.
If it makes you happy, then yeah. it belongs in your home. But, yeah, okay, so with Grand Millennial, it's people to call it a, like, a modern grandma style.
I love that.
Because it's a very strong mix of modern design aesthetics
yeah.
and vintage pieces. And it's not, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different types of quote-unquote vintage styles.
Right.
But this one typically incorporates a lot of Art Deco. You don't see a whole lot of mid-century modern, but sometimes. And just go yeah. look it up. It's great.
My mom's house is mid-century modern.
Yeah. And...
I just need the listeners to know that I rolled my eyes as I said that. she's going to listen to this and call me and be like, you don't like my house?
Yeah.
It's not boring. It's boring now.
It's boring now. and it's a very colorful design trend. So, I mean, I also just love it as someone who loves vintage anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, okay, awesome.
So if you guys have never heard of it, it's one word, Grand Millennial. And I'm looking at it on Pinterest, Grand Millennial style. And it is, I love it. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it says why Grandma Chic is coming back and why we love it.
Yeah.
I freaking love that. Grandma Chic, that's what I am.
Yes. I know. Oh. So many people look at that and go, oh, that's what I like. That's what
I love that. Liked. Oh, okay.
So the funny thing about Grand Millennial, though, is it was definitely not named by a millennial.
I know.
It's called Grand Millennial because it is, quote, grand and opulent and made by millennials.
Okay. I know somebody was trying to put us down in that term, but yeah. we're going to own it. I love it. I love all the wallpapers that people are using with it, too.
Yeah, my favorite.
And you know, that's something I might want to get your help with.
Sure.
I want to do a statement piece over my bed. Mm-hmm. And I have not been able to find a piece of art that I really feel like speaks to me. But yeah. I have found lots of wallpapers. And I thought about getting an old, big frame, like a really just fancy, like, whatever.
Yeah.
And putting wallpaper in it, like finding a wallpaper piece, and then hanging that on my bed.
Yeah, why not?
Cool.
It could be cool.
We may have to go on, like, a vintage trip.
Oh, I love it.
After Christmas, though, because I'm going to be a little broke.
I understand.
Yeah. Okay, okay, so then now one... Yeah, one interior design thing trend right now that you absolutely hate.
Farmhouse. Don't shoot me.
Farmhouse.
I was on that bandwagon when it came out. You know
it's all Chip and Good Joanna Gaines, that's right? I thought you were going to say Shiplap.
No, I love Joanna Gaines. Like, I think that she is amazing, and, like, as a business owner and businesswoman, she's just crazy, and she does the most. But, like, okay, but think of it this way. Modern farmhouse did not exist before Joanna Gaines.
That's true.
That's insane. Like, and right now with the real estate market, you know what the top-selling houses are?
Farmhouse. Yeah.
I mean, it's like an 80% sell rate. It's wild.
Until y'all realize that farms sometimes come with those houses in Missouri, and I'm like, how many acres? Oh, God. Lord, who's going to cut that grass?
Who's going to cut all that grass?
Right.
What about the cows? So, my problem with modern farmhouse is it has had such sweeping popularity in the United States, which is fine, but what, like 5% of the houses that are actually farmhouses are real farmhouses.
Exactly.
Do you get what I'm saying?
I've seen houses here in the city of Missouri, in the city of Springfield, sorry, that are not on a farm, that look like these normal houses. And then on Zillow, you go on the inside, and it's like farmhouse style and a new house. I'm like, how do you do that?
Yeah. Well, and I think why I dislike farmhouse is because I think, you know, it had a great time and things like that, but now it's everywhere. And it's even in places where it really shouldn't be. Like, in North Springfield, there are some really beautiful historic homes.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking, like, Victorian and Tudor and English and all of these amazing homes that do need a lot of work. Mm-hmm. But then they'll have people come in and renovate them in a modern farmhouse way. And that's an absolute tragedy because you cannot rebuild an original Victorian house, but you can build a farmhouse anywhere.
Exactly.
So that's my big problem.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
Just because farmhouse sells.
Yeah.
That's the only reason.
And I love North Springfield. We were just talking about this before we recorded the show, but like I love North Springfield. But for those of you who aren't from Springfield, North Springfield gets a bad rep because it's a lower income part of the community. There is a lot of nonprofits on the north side of Springfield, but there's a lot of homelessness, a lot of drug usage, but it's freaking gorgeous on the north side of Springfield, and it gets such a bad rep. I personally would love to buy a house in North Springfield. I struggle because it's going to need a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it is. It's gorgeous, and these houses here have so much story to them, you know?
Yeah.
That's what, like, these new houses that people are building all over, like, just outside of Springfield. I'm like, yeah, these houses are gorgeous, but there's no story.
No story. Yeah.
I don't want to be the first one to... I mean, while being the first one to live in a house, I guess is cool.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no story behind it.
Yeah.
Like...
I know. So, like, the house that we're sitting in right now, you probably didn't notice it, but the entire kitchen and dining room was all wall paneling.
And I did not notice that.
Mm-hmm. So you can still kind of see the grooves, but when we first got here, I was like, that is so cool. I wish that with every house, there was also, like, pictures of what it looked like when every buyer bought it, so that you could know, like, who lived there and what they do. And the only thing we know about our house, it was built in 1954, was that it once had a jacuzzi. That's the only, like, document that's we funny. Could find.
So it's kind of cool, the house that I grew up in, where my parents still live in Baltimore, that house only had one previous owner. The husband built it for his wife and their family. And so, like, my mom got to, the husband had passed away by the time my parents bought the house. Mm-hmm. But, like, they got to meet the woman whose, like, husband built this house for her. And she always loved, like, the New Orleans French Quarter style. Yeah. So my parents' house is in the middle of Baltimore with this New Orleans French Quarter, like, balcony on top. And it's just really pretty. And it's like a white, like a red brick painted right, I think is what their house is. Okay. But yeah, I love that there's like a story behind it. And the back door used to have, I don't even know if it's still there. It used to have this little music box and it would hook to the door. And when you open the door, it would sing because the couple that lived there before had a family member that lived with them or maybe it was the husband that had dementia, and the wife needed to know when he was opening the door.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like, you know, this little whole story about this house that will probably not stay in our family when my parents pass on because no one wants to live in it. But it can go to someone else and now they can make memories in it. But
yeah,
I totally get that. That's super cool. Yeah.
Cool. You said you had one other question?
I have one more thing.
Okay.
So what words of wisdom would you give to another female entrepreneur who's kind of like you? One thing I love about you is that you're doing something that you're passionate about, and not necessarily something that you went to school for, but it doesn't mean you have any less expertise. Mm. So what would you say to another woman who's listening, who has these dreams and things she wants to do or a business she wants to start, and she's feeling like she can't do it because she doesn't have the quote unquote degree for it?
Oh yeah, that's a good one. And honestly, it's still a piece that I struggle with, you know, all the time of convincing myself that I'm going to be okay and I can bring value. But, I would say it's a new age. People don't fucking care anymore. Truly. Like the right client isn't going to care.
Right.
You know, every single client that I have had has not asked me if I have an interior design degree. They just don't care.
Yeah.
And I think that in certain places,
your work probably speaks for itself.
Exactly. So let your work speak for it, or let you speak for it, because people hire people. Mm. They don't hire businesses. So just keep that in mind. And one of the best pieces of business advice that kind of goes along with this is always play to your strengths and don't care at all about your weaknesses.
Amen.
Literally just don't even worry about it. Just speak to your strengths. And don't try to, like, improve your weaknesses and things like that, because what you sell is your strengths.
That's good.
So, yeah. And then, you know, as far as, like, getting a degree in school, you can always go get more school.
That's true.
If you really want to.
That's true.
But you'll probably find that you don't need it. Mm-hmm. Because in a lot of fields, a degree just isn't everything. Like, for you, you know, you could have gotten a degree in social media management, but it would have taught you to learn or to run your business in the way that you do?
No.
Social media looked different 5 years ago.
Ain't that the freaking truth? That's me trying to, like, figure out how to use TikTok right now. Like, what is happening?
Yeah. But then also, like, just another random small soapbox is school does not get you to places in life like we were told it does.
A freaking been to that. Yes.
So
true.
Yeah, like I'm about to talk with a high schooler who thinks she wants to go into interior design, and I'm going to talk with her about like what it's been like because she is thinking about going to it for college. But I think it'll be good for her to have both perspectives.
Yeah,
provided that she does talk with an interior designer who has a degree.
Right.
But yeah, I mean that's just my fiance and I talk about this all the time.
That's a whole another episode.
It is.
We do a whole other episode. Like, that's something I would love to do, is do, like, a roundtable episode with people talking about, like, okay, college, is it good or bad? Because I personally feel like I learned things in college. Mm-hmm. More than were life lessons, not really educational pieces.
Yes.
There was a lot of some life experience that I gained there.
Definitely.
But, like, college is a business. Let's be honest.
It is.
It's a business.
Yeah.
And they're making a lot of freaking money off of us.
Yeah.
And I'm still trying to pay off that degree. You know, and now that I have a daughter, like, I would totally support Cam not going straight into college after high school.
Yeah.
But again, that's a totally another episode. So I totally get that. We could get on a soapbox about
that. We could get on a soapbox about
that. Because it's a whole thing. Going into debt for what?
For what?
Starting your life in debt for what?
Yeah.
Like, I've learned so much in life.
Yeah.
That college could have never taught me.
No, for sure.
And I was just, when I graduated college, I was just a really smart graduate with no life experience.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I didn't know how to sell myself, especially as a woman of color. Hmm. I didn't understand that concept. I was like, well, I'll just apply and they'll want to talk to me. And it wasn't the case.
Yeah.
Because also, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Oh, it totally is.
So, again, the power of networking yourself or just putting yourself out. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
It is a whole thing.
I'm going to plan that as a future episode.
Maybe I'm looking forward to it. Okay.
Well, thank you, Abby.
Yes, I'm so glad
you got to get on your little soapbox today. Let's talk. You're amazing.
Oh, you are too, girl.
For all of you guys listening, I will have all of Abby's social media handles in the show notes today. I also will put up her website and maybe a few links for some design, some of the things we talked about, maybe the Grand Millennial.
Yeah.
Put up a couple links that you like, so maybe some examples and stuff. We can share that. And yeah, thank you guys for tuning in.
Bye. Thanks.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Okay, Let's Talk. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to stay up to date on our latest episodes. You can also check the episode notes for ways to get in touch with me and for more info on the show. Until next time, own your story and live empowered. Bye.